each of these issues is not a separate issue, and that if they are not all addressed in a comprehensive manner that brings the people that have been systematically disenfranchised and ignored up, lifts their floor, like, we're not going to get the answers that we need to get.
Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna, a show where I will share all the amazing and exciting works of sustainability happening across the eastern foothills of the Appalachian Mountains to the lush farmlands of southeastern Pennsylvania. By celebrating our community, we can help to bridge the gap between local and international sustainability endeavors. Today's guests are Jane Palmer, director of Berks Stands Up, Troy Turner, coordinator of Sunrise Movement Berks Hub, and Celine Schreier, an active member of both grassroots organizations. A few weeks ago, I sat down with my guests to talk about three compounding crises we all face at the moment of climate change, racism, and COVID-19, and all during a economic crisis. We explore how local and national political inaction got us to this point in our community. Together, we discussed how policies like a Green New Deal and a green stimulus can bring about a more just and sustainable future that addresses all of these issues head on. If you would like to learn more about what a green stimulus, Green New Deal, or even a green recovery is, go to the latest edition of the weekly Ingest newsletter published on June 22nd over on the Sustaining with Shayna website. You can find the newsletter published under the resource blog tab. Before we meet our guests, let's hear a word from our sponsor for this week. Today's sponsor is FD Market. FD Market is a small, sustainable, everyday goods shop located in Emmaus, Pennsylvania, and also just turned 6 months old recently. Their goal is to provide affordable and practical sustainability products and resources to their community. Better yet, their products are ethically and as locally sourced as possible. Products like alternatives to plastic wrap and storage containers to shampoo bars and toothpaste tablets. A few months ago, I was excited to learn about FD Market, a zero-waste home goods store that was finally coming to our community. It gives me hope that people now have the opportunity to go sustainable and support a small local business at the same time. I'm most excited about trying to reduce my plastic waste consumption in the bathroom, with all the products we use are stored in bottles made with terrible petrochemicals. To start, I'm excited to try the shampoo bars that FD Market sells. Do you want to give FD Market a try and begin to live a zero-waste lifestyle? Well, you're in luck. As part of a special promotion, you can get 15% off your next purchase with the promo code SustainingWithShayna. This promo code can be used on their online store as well as in person. If you don't live in eastern Pennsylvania, don't worry. FD Market can ship your order right to your front door. For listeners who are local, FD Market just opened back up their physical store on June 5th. Check out their website, fdmarketco.com, and their social media accounts for more details for their hours as well as policies and procedures during COVID-19. Hi there, and welcome back to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. Today, I'm excited to announce that I have members from Sunrise Berks as well as Berks Stands Up, and both organizations are working really hard to fight for a better world here in our community, as well as the nationally and across the state of Pennsylvania as well. So, please introduce yourselves and your respective organizations. So, who would like to start?
I guess I'll start since these two are both being a little shy. my name is Celine Schreier. I am a member and what I like to call a baby leader of Sunrise Berks, and that I'm learning a lot and getting a lot of direction and helping support other people in their leadership as well. And I'm also a supporting member of Berks Stands Up, who helps to support and help any of the planning from the leadership team.
Great. Thanks. Hi, Celine.
Hi, Jane.
My name is Jane Palmer. I am the director of Berks Stands Up. We are a multi-issue group building independent political power in Berks County. And we are really thrilled to have all of you among our active folks. I think we have a lot in common and a lot we can do to address these problems.
And last but certainly not least,
I am Troy. Troy Turner. I also help out with Berks Stands Up. But today I'm wearing my Sunrise hat. I'm the coordinator for the local hub. And our catchphrase or whatever you want to call it is that we're building an army of young people to fight for the future that our generation deserves.
Sounds wonderful. So kind of going off of that, and kind of want to hear your respective thoughts, the three of you with this, is how in the wake of COVID-19 and climate change and now all these national and international issues of really addressing racism across the world, like, sorry, your dog's barking.
Sorry, she's barking through the headphones. I'll try to get away from her.
Sorry.
Use this as a moment to plug having cats. They just lay next to me on my desk.
So with Sunrise Berks as well as Berks Stands Up, how do you see organizations like yourselves not just addressing the COVID-19 crisis in which we're in, but as well as climate change and racism in a time where they're all happening all at once?
I have some thoughts about that. I think that one of the things we have to be clear in this moment about is that all of this is connected. All of these crises are connected. They also are, they're coming to a head, and it feels like they're all happening now. In fact, they've been happening for decades. And what underlies all of them, and by all of them, I'm referring to the coronavirus pandemic and our nation's response to it. I'm responding to the murder of George Floyd and the response to that. And I'm referring to climate change and the call for massive systemic solutions to that. And what underlies all of it is greed, is market-based, unfettered capitalism, and all of the systems that come to play to support that capitalism, namely systemic racism. You know, we know that climate change is impacting poor people, marginalized people, Black and brown people all over the world disproportionately hard. Obviously, what's happened around the murder of George Floyd has brought into the public light what certainly Black people knew was happening all along, but now that we have cell phones and mass media, social media, we know that it's happening. We can't not see these things. So, you know, we have these massive underclasses in our country that are impacted by climate change, by poverty, by racism. And finally, by the coronavirus. You know, look at the numbers. Look at who gets hit the worst. It's poor people and people of color, because in general their health systems are poorer, because their ability to respond is less agile. So I think one of the things that Burke Stands Up and Sunrise is doing is helping people make meaning in this moment. I think it's, you know, it's really overwhelming. I mean, it's overwhelming. These last 2 weeks have been even more overwhelming than the rest of 2020 and the rest of, you know, the last 3 years, which have been overwhelming in their own wretched ways. But people need to find meaning, and I think that that's one of the most important things that our two groups are doing, is helping people understand the interconnection between the crises and to see the deeper roots of it. The deeper roots being our, you know, basically lifelong, as far as the life of our nation is concerned, lifelong commitment to profits and property over people. We are happy to accept the death of people in aid of profit. That's what slavery's been about. Mm-hmm. That's how our country got started, and that's how it's still running. And I think our groups are really going a long way to helping people connect the dots. And then, you know, and then that helps inform what to do next. I mean, the whole question of what to do next is a really big one, but I think it's also important to help people understand what this means. And it's hard because, you know, there's been a dominant political narrative, and I'm sure Troy and Celine can talk with a lot of authority about the Reagan alignment. You know, we have been thinking about how our world works in a certain frame of mind. And I'm seeing a big shift in that and how we understand what's going on. And I think that's the first thing our groups are doing.
Yeah. So Troy and Celine, would you like to kind of add in on what Jane was saying, in addition to kind of introducing to the listeners what the Reagan alignment is and where that terminology came from and how that's kind of created these crises of COVID-19, racism, as well as climate change.
Sure. Yeah, I can hop in. Yeah, I think just to expand on like all the things that Jane was saying, we view everything through the lens of climate change as Sunrise. But I think about Philly Hub, who has been doing so much work with Philly Thrive and other community organizations around the PES oil refinery and the astronomical rates of cancer and asthma surrounding the oil refinery, which is primarily a Black and brown community. Then I think about how COVID-19 is worse in areas with air pollution and how those areas are Black and brown communities. And then we see the horrific image of that cop on George Floyd's throat. And there's just so many just really highlight what Jane was saying, white America and the power structures that have been built by colonization have been choking out Black and brown communities since this country was formed. And yeah, it's I like what Jane said about especially social media just gives us so much direct viewing of it now that we can't ignore it like we have been for decades and centuries. You asked about the Reagan alignment, which is just this we have a whole training about it where we talk about it for 90 minutes. But if I have to sum it up in a couple sentences, it's just this idea that all of our solutions are gonna come from the market, and that shrinking the government as much as possible is the way to do things. And it's why the best solutions we've been able to get for climate change are carbon taxes. It's why we've seen Trump and even Democrats like Nancy Pelosi respond to COVID-19 relief the way they have. And it's also why we see pretty toothless police reforms coming out of DC that are not in line with what the movement for Black Lives are demanding. And that's the three sentence crash course on that.
To pick up kind of where you left off on that, I think it's important to note that Sunrise is, I think, very much in line with movement for Black Lives, ideas and concepts, is that we're attempting to build a multiracial, multi-class coalition of young people and old people to move forward. And we recognize that the moment where we're in, especially in regards to climate change and in regards to everything else that we're dealing with right now in America and in the world, came through strategic choices that were made that didn't just start with the Reagan alignment, but really started to solidify during that time. And we're aligned with them in that we see these exploitative forces from prisons, from fossil fuel executives, from the police unions and the power that they hold, as well as the exploitative corporations that are controlling basically everything right now. They're controlling our reform. They're making it difficult for us to have real conversations with people across the political divide about this because they have taken so much control away from the people. And we want to focus back on the people. We want to bring the people back into this conversation and find our common ground and build together instead of build separately to start tackling these massive issues that are going to outline our entire lives as they already have. And if we don't do something now as a generation, I don't know if we're going to be able to take as many steps as we need to quickly to handle these things.
Yeah, I really resonate with what all three of you have said. And the only thing else I would kind of add to that is having gone away to the UN climate talks and really seeing how, especially the most recent one in Madrid this past December, of how these multinational corporations are still trying to have their finger on the button of creating international climate action and plans, and continuously, again, it's demanding that market-based solutions are the only thing that works, and that in a lot of ways it seems like this is not just an American issue, this is an international issue, that we live this kind of Eurocentric lifestyle on the fact that, like, people from the poorest communities around the world just don't matter, but they do, and they need to be heard. And those are the nations that are screaming and crying out for the most aggressive solutions and policies. And a lot of the major countries around the world just don't listen to them at these events. So it's kind of a yearly merry-go-round a lot of times with it. And then the other thing I was going to mention too is, and Jane has always brought this up on several occasions, is like the most toxic thing that Ronald Reagan has always said. He's like, the eight most like deadly words or something is for the government to say is, I'm here from the government and I'm here to help, which is how it should be. We should be there to help other people. It shouldn't be about capitalism and the almighty dollar always having a say on who survives and who doesn't, or who survives climate change and does not. And so with all of us talking about this, it leads into a perfect segue of, how do you see not just national and international politics and issues with this affecting these three crises, but how do you see local leadership, especially for those people who might be listening from outside of the southeastern Pennsylvania region or even outside of Berks County? Kind of explain how our local leadership has failed us when addressing COVID-19, climate change, and racism.
Yeah. You know, there's this old saying, all politics is local. And I've never really known what to do with that. But the fact is that we have been we're all pretty lazy when it comes to our democracy. We have a tendency to, you know, those of us who believe in electoral politics regularly go out and vote. And, you know, we vote in the primary and then we vote in the general, and then we go home and pat ourselves on the back for having voted. And then we just kick back and expect our elected representatives to represent us. And in fact, they don't. And they have no particular reason to, because most of us haven't been paying attention. We just say, okay, go do your job. And we forget that it's up to us to define that job. You know, I think both Berks Stands Up and Sunrise share a belief that government is supposed to work for the people. It's supposed to work for all of us. And by all of us, I mean all of us. All of us, including the most vulnerable, including those who don't vote, including those who are undocumented, including those who need help. That's what government is for. And you don't get a government like that unless you work for it. So, you know, I'd like to say that we need to, first of all, everybody needs to get off their butt and start paying attention. You know, everybody was all up in arms when Trump got elected and wringing their hands and going, oh my God, how could this have happened? This is not the America I know. And a whole lot of folks in the community were like, why didn't you know that? And it's because we've been sitting on our laurels of our white privilege, of our the privilege that enabled us not to pay attention, not to notice that some people weren't getting represented. So, you know, individual people need to pay attention when they need to band together into groups like ours, because what we're doing is building the political power that's needed to demand the changes that we know are required. You know, one of us, like, if, you know, Jane Palmer or Celine Schreier or Troy Turner goes and speaks to an elected representative, that's just one person, and they can say, well, you know, I got a lot of constituents. That's just one person. But if 1,000 of us show up, if 10,000 of us show up, then we're talking real numbers. And eventually what we need to do is make sure that the people in elected office are us. You know, we're not just talking demands, we're talking co-governance. We have to be at the table. We have to be in elected office. And the people who represent us have to be of us and for us and working with us to make the changes that are needed. It's not going to be easy. You know, right now we're seeing various school board members all around Berks suddenly being outed for their just gross, vulgar racism. And everybody's like, what? Look at this. Oh my God. And, you know, that outrage is appropriate. In some cases, they're being asked to resign. It's like, awesome. Awesome. Those people didn't exist in a vacuum. There are a lot of systems that have kept them going, that have backed them up, that have turned a blind eye to what we know is going to be various forms of systemic racism in those schools. Our county commissioners have done pathetically little about the COVID pandemic, absolutely nothing about climate change. And is today Wednesday? Today, what they're doing about racism, let me tell you what they're doing. They have called a meeting with the title of What Changes Are Needed in Law Enforcement. And guess who's on the panel? On the panel is the county commissioners, the sheriff, and umpteen representatives of law enforcement.
I'm not very interested in their opinions, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. That's just, I mean, have we learned nothing?
Well,
have we learned nothing?
Apparently not.
You can't, you know, I mean, police can't police themselves. We know that for a fact. And if there's one thing that they should be hearing from the nationwide and very local protests, is that people who are impacted need to be heard. They haven't got that memo yet. So,
I mean, I think that speaks to a larger issue, which is that, like, it was meant to be this way. We weren't, we weren't taught about these things in schools. African-American history is considered extracurricular education in virtually everywhere. And we aren't taught how to actively participate in our civic duties. And that's why it becomes so much more difficult for people to figure out how to get involved. And it's very convenient for them to have a public that doesn't know how to engage, doesn't know how to have these difficult conversations, because they don't want us to have these difficult conversations. It's been a point for over 400 years in this country to separate white people from people of color and to separate poor people from poor people of color as well, because it only serves the richest of the rich, and generally the richest of the rich are white people that control all of the power. And it's a part of our responsibility of being grassroots organizations to have these conversations, to educate people, to continuously talk about these topics and reach out to people and bring them in. which is difficult. It's very difficult. That's something that Sunrise pushes a lot. And that was one of their first things that they, I feel like they mentioned in response to this moment. And that I know Troy can talk to, which is the calling people in instead of calling people out right now and trying to have real conversations and bring them to a level where they can at least begin to empathize and understand. Because we should be all questioning why we didn't learn about the constant repetition of protests and riots that were turned into riots because of police violence. And those protests were initially also about police brutality and violence at those times. And they have continuously happened throughout our history. And we weren't educated on these topics. Specific to Pennsylvania, I don't think I know a single person that was educated about the MOVE bombings in Philadelphia, despite the fact that that happened right here. And we didn't, nobody told us, we didn't know. And as children, you don't know to look for those things, especially if you're a white child. If you're a child of color, you know about those things because that is your history, that is your life. And we have to be better in our communities to be ensuring that if our government isn't going to step up or they're not ready to step up yet, we're going to make them step up. And if they're not going to step up, we are going to step up in place of them, like we have had to do with COVID already in creating mutual aid programs and helping our most vulnerable in our communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's so on point with both what Celine and Jane were saying, but I think another thing that is a really good opportunity to bring up, especially with failed local leadership of our county commissioners, is, Troy, can you talk a little bit about what the story is and what the issue behind the Berks Detention Center is, and especially like how that directly relates to this consistent issue of the three topics we've been talking about today, which is climate change, racism, and COVID, and how they all overlap with each other.
Yeah, that's such a good example. So the, I guess, background information for anyone who's unfamiliar is that Berks County is the only county in the entire country to partner with ICE to run a family detention center. Which has been operating since Obama's second term. And obviously Trump just dashed a whole extra layer of cruelty on top of that. It's such an intersection of all these things. I remember talking to some of the attorneys who represent the families inside who talked about just so many of the families fleeing from crop failures in Guatemala, which are getting worse and worse every year as a result of climate change. Talking about how so many families are indigenous to Guatemala. There was a genocide a couple decades ago, and this like forced removal that's happening now is a result of like lingering anti-indigenous sentiment. These families are not given aid when their crops fail. So it's like either starve or come to the States. And when they come here, they're thrown in detention centers where they don't have a means of translating with the guards or anything because people don't speak those indigenous languages. So much overlap. And I think like the racism portion of it was just so evident last year when a British family ended up in there. The whole story is wild of how they actually got there. Folks should look that up. As soon as they were there, it became like this huge national, well, I guess international story. And they were got out like so quickly, and everything that they said was the same thing that families have been saying for years about that place, but like it coming out of a white mouth, just landed so differently, and created such a, wider response than it did when anyone else was saying it. And now, like, COVID-19 is a thing. And there's so many families, well, there's 5 families still trapped inside where they can't social distance. They don't have appropriate access to, you know, basic sanitary supplies to stay safe. And our county actually started releasing low-level offenders from prison and exploring alternatives to prevent the spread. But the same people who did that won't extend that same logic to this detention center. And yeah, then just what feels like the depths of cruelty was not just in Berks, but in detention centers around the country. ICE gave the families the option of giving up custody of their children to be rehomed in the States to save them from the pandemic. Or, you know, pray that you don't get it. And there's a name for that. I forget what that term is.
Sophie's Choice?
Sophie's Choice. That's it. And yeah, we see all of that kind of, all of these issues combining in this one center. It's such a, yeah, great or terrible example of it.
Yeah, and our commissioners are just steadfast in their refusal to budge and in their just bald-faced denial of reality. They will say, and I quote, "Those people are very well cared for." But we know, and we have sworn statements from those 5 families. They're not well cared for. I mean, Troy mentioned that they're not, it's social distancing is not possible in those close quarters. They do not have masks or gloves. They are not well. People are reporting that they're sick, that children are sick. You know, this is not new. There's been lots of documented cases of medical neglect, parents begging for attention for their children who had fevers, who were bleeding, who were suffering in various ways, and nothing was done. But now you add the mortal danger of the coronavirus on top of that, and it becomes a death sentence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one thing I'd like to add in here, especially for those who might be listening that don't live in the area or are not familiar with a detention center. The detention center is what, only like 10, 15 miles outside of downtown Sydney?
Yeah, probably
Redding.
About 8.
And yeah, so even less than that. And just how, like, the fact that we even forget it exists for some of us. And for those, it's like, that live here in Berks County may not even know it exists to begin with. And that is even a fundamental problem in itself, is that people are willing to blindly deny that it even exists in the first place. And I think that that's a real catastrophic problem, is, you know, the whole thing with the Black Lives Matter movement is when you're silent, you're complacent in violence and these murders and stuff like that. And, or your silence is also a way that you're complacent in oppression of other people. And I think that's really important, because I know some people that listen to this podcast probably never even heard of the Berks Detention Center. And I think we need to have a start where, I don't know, there needs to be whole, I don't know, community-wide conversations.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I'll be honest, up until like roughly 2016, when I first was introduced to Troy and them, I did not know that we had a detention center in a county I grew up in my whole life. Mm-hmm. And that's like a startling privilege to behold, that you don't have to be aware of these things because they're not going to impact me. But it's absolutely horrifying to see that there is still so little action being taken on it from our state.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I guess, like, Jane and Troy, you could probably speak on this more, but hasn't the detention center existed mm-hmm. for, like, 15 years? That's so ridiculous. Like, just like Celine, I've maybe only learned within the last four or five years that it exists. And that's really deeply troubling that we've had this for 15 years and it's only been in the last few years that people have started to notice.
Well, we've had a lot of systemic bad things going on for quite a while that we've only just started to notice.
Yeah. So then kind of like shifting gears and so laying all the issues kind of out on the table and what's going on here locally on a countywide, statewide, national and international level. Where do we go from here? Because we have these three compounding crises all at once. But where do we go from here? And we know business as usual and the way the world was before the pandemic hit and before climate change was a constant everyday issue, that doesn't work anymore. So where do we go next?
I mean, I think the first step is to recognize that each of these issues is not a separate issue mm-hmm. and that if they are not all addressed in a comprehensive manner that brings the people that have been systematically disenfranchised and ignored up, lifts their floor, like we're not going to get the answers that we need to get to fix these problems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's spot on, Celine. I think we have to hold two things in our head simultaneously. We have to understand that everything's connected, and that it's massive and systemic and old and really built in. And that we, you know, I think a lot of us have learned a lot in the past couple of weeks, couple of months, couple of years, couple of decades. You know, we need to keep learning. We need to keep our eyes open. If we're just seeing stuff now, imagine what we'll see next week. We need to keep our minds and our hearts open to learning and to seeing how it all fits together. But we also need to hold on to the idea that it's like that can get really overwhelming. And you can say, oh my God, it's so big. Ah, what do I do? I'm just a little person. Well, there are things each of us can do. And those are the things that we have to do. We need to talk to our friends. Make sure our friends join us on this journey of discovery. We need to start showing up. Like, there's a commissioner's board meeting tomorrow at Thursday at 10 a.m. It's virtual. You can show up online. Ask them some questions. They might not answer, but get those questions out there. Get your feet wet. Get your friend to ask a question. Start checking out the, you know, your school board. What's going on there? Join a group. Each of our groups are really happy to give people stuff to do. We got a lot of stuff to do. And you just raise your hand. We'll give you stuff to do. You know, it's about accountability. It's about showing up. It's about paying attention. And it's about bringing in other people. We can get real discouraged because there's a lot of haters mm-hmm. out there. And they're noisy. They're so noisy. And it's easy to get discouraged. And we here in Berks, we can get discouraged by, you know, we look at a map and we go, ugh, We're red. Ugh. Ugh, we're red. Well, you know what? There's a lot of us here who aren't. Let me just make one other point. I know I'm talking a lot, but I gotta say, I think the stuff we're talking about is not left and right. It's not Democratic or Republican. There are a lot of us who believe that Black Lives Matter. There is a vast majority of people that know that climate change is real and has to be addressed in big, bold ways. The vast majority of us know that people need healthcare and that it shouldn't be attached to our jobs. For heaven's sake, if 40 million people unemployed doesn't tell you that attaching our healthcare to jobs is a stupid idea, then, you know, so I really truly believe that there's a lot of us who want these things. There's a lot of us who want government to work for everybody. There's a lot of us who want mm-hmm. to be able to raise their children, have the courage to have children, for heaven's sake, in a world where we can all breathe. So I really don't think, I think we have to kind of let go of the idea that the political parties will solve these problems. They haven't done such a great job so far. And neither will the big economic powers. Police won't police itself. Neither will corporations police themselves. We know this. If we can get together in these independent groups and start flexing our muscles, there's a lot we can do. Just have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts with that part, Celine and Troy, before I kind of go on to my next question?
I don't think I can say it better than Jane said it. I think I just bring back actually another point that Jane made earlier in the conversation about like going to your legislator like alone versus like, with a group, and like organizing is the same way. You can be having these conversations, you know, with your family and be doing so much on your own, and that absolutely makes an impact. But like that impact just like quadruples when you come together with other people in your community and organize for like collective political power.
Ooh. So, can I offer up the 129th as an example?
Yeah,
go for it.
So
sure,
we have I think it's 9 representatives in Berks County who represent parts of Berks County in Harrisburg. We elect them to go to Harrisburg and be our representatives in the legislature there. They don't do a very good job of that. One of them is named Jim Cox, and Jim Cox is the representative in the state legislative district 129. It includes parts of Sinking Spring and out to Wernersville, the Heidelbergs, out there in the kind of southwest parts of Berks County. Jim Cox is, he's a Republican. He is also the chair of the Labor and Industry Committee, which means he's got a lot of power in Harrisburg. One of the things he chose to do with that power is block any meaningful increase in the minimum wage. As many of you know, we have a $7.25 an hour minimum wage here in Pennsylvania. And we also have what's called the tipped wage, which is waitresses and people who are supposed to hustle for tips. And their minimum wage is $2.83 an hour. It's been that way for more than a decade. So y'all know that, you know, inflation happens, and that money gets relatively smaller and smaller. It's poverty wage. It's starvation wage. People who work for minimum wages often have to work two and three jobs just to make ends meet. Those who work for tip wages have to do two and three jobs, and they have to subject themselves to, in many cases, sexual harassment. Those tips don't come cheap. Wage theft, in many cases. That's the kind of thing that Jim Cox is happy to leave the way it is. That's another thing most people believe in. Most people believe that people should have a decent living wage. He does not represent his constituents in that respect. And in that respect, he's complicit, as we've been saying, in keeping people down. We know who works minimum wages. It's poor people by definition. It's people of color. It's women of color who are working in those tipped wages by and large. He's got his thumb on their, I was going to say he's got his knee on their back, on their neck. He kind of does. He has a challenger this year. Her name is Kelly McDonough. We don't know her very well yet. We hope to know her quite a bit better. I think she stands a chance of unseating Jim Cox. She is a teacher at the Wilson School District and has spoken very movingly about the students she sees in the district. She knows there are students in her classrooms who are coming to school hungry, who are coming to school undocumented, who are coming to school documented but in fear of their parents who are undocumented. She knows a lot about the suffering that's going on in her district and what needs to be done about it. We are going to be very active in that district in hopes of unseating Jim Cox. There are a lot of them like him, and there are a lot that we hope to unseat. It's going to take a lot of work. Kelly McDonough did pretty darn well in the Democratic primary. She didn't have a challenger. She did pretty well. I think if we get out enough votes, get enough people engaged and realize how important this is, we can flip that district. There might be more districts we can flip. It all depends on people showing up. So y'all, anybody who can hear this, show up, y'all. We're going to go, we're going to be talking to voters in as many ways as possible in that and many other districts in Berks County. We can do this. We can flip the state house. If not this year, in 2022. We can do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know if you mentioned this, Jean, but this has always been one of my favorite little quotes from you. It's just that if you know enough that you want things to change, you know enough to get involved and do something. Because most of those people sitting in those offices are just like us, and it only seems like they know so much more because they have money to pay people to make it seem like they know so much more. And like case in point, me constantly feeling I don't know enough. There are so many free resources because there's so many other people that want to do this work. Like right now, taking courses through Movement School Online, which is a nationwide organization that provides these trainings and resources to help people understand how they can get involved in electoral organizing and understanding how to do fundraising for their grassroots organizations, learning about doing the data and the behind the scenes, like, and all of your local groups will have places to send you and like know people to put you in touch with to help build these skills in your life so you do feel more comfortable getting involved. Because I won't lie to you and say that, like, it's easy to get on your first phone banking calls. It's very nerve-wracking, but there are trainings available through places like Voice of Westmoreland.
Voices of Westmoreland is there a group kind of like ours in out in the Pittsburgh area.
Yeah, and they do deep canvassing training, which is like the type of training you're going to want to utilize during our COVID issues at the moment, is getting on the phone and having deeper conversations with voters, building mm-hmm. relationships, getting to a common ground of understanding, and like starting to push people towards knowing what change needs to happen. And that's the only way we build our numbers. I mean, the way we do the hard work to build our numbers.
It's not just Voices Up Westmoreland, Celine. It's our state partners at PA Stands Up are offering a whole series of mm-hmm. deep canvas trainings. And anybody can come to them. And it's a little nerve-wracking to get on that first call. But once you've done it, you can look in the mirror and go, damn, mm-hmm. I did that. And now I can do another one. And then pretty soon you know how to do it and you can help somebody else do it too. It's really empowering to see yourself learn. And it's a pretty great feeling.
And I mean, I'll also give a plug for Sunrise in that as well. I've had this conversation with Troy a number of times, is the way in which they offer trainings and support helps you build yourself. So you have the power within yourself to take on these actions. And you also have a community that you can go to for advice to help build even more, and like to understand how to reach out to people and to talk about these things and the struggles that come with taking action, because it's not easy to stand on the right side of history at times, but like it's also easy at the same time because you know it's right and there are people that stand with you to do these things.
Mm-hmm. And so kind of all of that said is a perfect segue to the kind of tail end of our conversation and asking this question of what would a just and green transition out of COVID-19 and the other pandemic that is racism look like for our city, county, and state, and how, why not the country and the world?
That's the question, isn't
That's
it?
That's the question. That is the question.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, go for it.
You know, two words come to my mind right away. One is vision and one is imagination. And Sunrise does a beautiful job with creating the environments to help people imagine. It's hard because we're so used to the way things are and we just think, well, that's the way it is. But I think it starts with us imagining what it would be like. Imagine what it would be like to not have to go to a stinking gas station to put stinking gas in your car so you could go to a meeting and stink up all the air and stink up the parking lot. You know, just like, there could be some form of mass transportation. There could be more parks. People could have jobs that make things that people actually need. People could have jobs that don't ruin their mm-hmm. lungs and their backs and their hands and their eyesight. That's just a start.
Yeah.
So I feel like this is a perfect segue into Troy probably talking about the Green New Deal and what does that mean?
It gets this rap as a energy transition plan, but at its base level, it's really like it's like an economic plan for the 21st century that like centers equity and justice and like works to undo all of the systemic problems that we've kind of been talking about. The like first major plank of the Green New Deal to come out in like real legitimate legislation was the Green New Deal for public housing. Pennsylvania would actually be one of the and our district too would actually be one of the states to most benefit from this legislation, both in like from a public housing standpoint and also from a job standpoint. And it just looks at like, you know, our much like a lot of our public infrastructure, our public housing infrastructure is crumbling. So it would look to start this transition in our public housing spaces, switching, you know, that energy over to renewable energy, making it owned by the community, by the public housing folks themselves. It would put a lot of people to work. It would create spaces for businesses, for people who live in public housing. It would do so much to address so many of these, intersecting and compounding crises. That the Green New Deal is really like the economic stimulus we need to pull ourselves out of this, call it what it is, this depression that we're in. And that's honestly just a start.
Yeah, and then there's also, I've been reading in the news lately about a lot of green stimulus response, which is a little bit different than the Green New Deal. And I'm not entirely sure how that works per se, but I guess from the difference between like the Green New Deal and the green stimulus is money that would have gone to stimulate the economy reopening goes to specific sustainable based projects. So I guess I'm not entirely sure of how the two are different, but they're very similar in the sense of like, we are only going to escape these crises if we do it in a sustainable way, both environmentally and economically. And I mean, what was it? Like a couple weeks ago, there were reports that were announced that it was either Germany or the EU. It might have been both of them that announced really aggressive green stimulus and Green New Deal responses to COVID-19. And I mean, that's great. But at the same time, it's really frustrating to see how our politicians here in the United States have failed us when the Green New Deal movement really started here in the U.S. and how we haven't got any of it done or even started to really address it. And really shows what Jane said earlier is that our party system has failed us and continues to fail us. And I don't know what it's going to take for that to change.
Yeah, I want to introduce this framework that actually our friend Sarah introduced to me, but she brought it in from Deirdre Smith of the Blackout Collective. Deirdre Shelley is a Sunrise person. It just takes us back to that like Audre Lorde quote of you can't dismantle the master's house with the master's tools. And if we are thinking about how we want to solve all of these things, the Reagan alignment is it's like thinking that makes us use the master's tools.
Yeah.
They're like capitalism and patriarchy and racism. So if we try to go about solving any of these individually using the, like with those tools still in our hands, we're not going to solve any of it. So when we're looking at all these compounding crises, we have to think like completely outside that framework. And I would go back to what Jane was saying in that it takes a lot of like vision and imagination in a population that has like not been allowed to have access to those things for so long. Just, you know, when you're just trying to survive, it's hard to envision this bold future or whatever. So, I mean, part of the equation is totally like just having conversations and like making our communities and our neighbors believe that like this change is actually possible. And that like, you know, all around we're like ready to do the work to make that happen.
So in a recent conversation that Jane mentioned before is these two triangles. Does anybody know kind of what is the story behind that? Whether either Jane could comment or someone else could comment as far as what does that mean?
So the 3 points of like the Reagan alignment are free market capitalism, individualism, and anti-government sentiment. And that's like an inverse of what we call the people's alignment, which would be interdependence and community, an economy for the common good, and a government for the common good.
Yeah, the whole government thing kind of, it always reminds me of this conversation I had with a friend in Canada who pointed out that America did such a great job in training us to be fearful of our government and to question it, despite the fact that it was literally designed to serve the people. That was like their framework. And how hearing that for the first time, like shifted my mind completely about even my own opinions of the government, because I think even people that tend to be more progressive hold on to those notions because of how our government has been behaving and the way it's been co-opted over these past few decades, that like we hold on to that. But like that's got to be a framework that we consistently strive to push away from. That our government is elected by us, for us, and like to be upset that we might have social services pushed through them is kind of ridiculous, because that's where they should be coming from. If our money is going into taxes, we should be able to decide that our money should be moving more towards social services, which plays into the whole conversation about defund the police and reinvest in our communities, especially in our Black communities, which is that they've never had that opportunity to have money reinvested to them. It's just constantly been pushed into other places. And we need to take that control back.
Mm-hmm. Any additional thoughts with that,
no,
Troy?
That's well said.
Yeah, so then kind of coming to an end here and wrapping up, what do you think is your biggest hope of change happening when addressing racism, climate change, and COVID-19 here in our community?
I guess I'm seeing a lot of energy right now. So many marches and protests and whatnot. Even in places that, like there's one in Hamburg on Friday, that's wild, I wouldn't expect that. There's one in Boyertown, there's one in Wernersville coming up. Yeah, so all these places mobilizing around this issue.
Last weekend.
So I think both the challenge and the opportunity is, I guess, the same as it always is, how to organize this like surge of energy into like long-term power and long-term organizing, not just like reactionary organizing in response to something bad that we don't like, but like organizing proactively to build something that we want together, and how we bring all of these people in to be doing like meaningful and fulfilling work in a way that like increases all of our overall capacity and just pushes our agenda forward, you know, at a local level.
Yeah, I very much agree. I would, I would really love to see a lot of these new organizers who may not even recognize themselves as organizers quite yet, be elevated, because there's, like Troy said, there's just so much energy right now and people don't necessarily know where to direct it. And there are a lot of places they can direct it, specifically in our city and in Berks County. And we need to like capitalize on this moment to bring them into that, so we can keep the momentum going forward. Because our commissioners aren't going to change anything if they don't have to change anything. And we've been having like okay success with getting like maybe 5 to 15 people asking questions at these Zoom calls for our commissioners. And what we really need is we need like hundreds of people calling in and talking to them and sending emails consistently, like we saw out in LA, and their Zoom call with the police commission, where literally hundreds of people called in and laid into them. And we need that kind of energy everywhere. We need people continuing to go down this path, and staying focused. And that means like making sure we put people in the right positions that like bring them joy and speak to them, and connecting them to the right organizations. Like I have a friend who's super, super passionate about racial justice issues, and I'd love to bring them into Sunrise, but I also now don't see that Sunrise is like the right fit for them, but I still want them to be connected, and I'm doing the work to help them find the best space that matches their energy and matches what they're fighting for. Because I don't want it to be about like scarcity and keeping everybody in the same place, because we want to build one power. We want to build power across the board. And that means like showing up for all of our partners all of the time in every way that's possible.
Yeah, I definitely think that's important to address in those ways. And I think a lot of it is just trying to figure out where your voice is and having a voice. Any last thoughts that Jane might have as well? And
just join us. BerksStandsUp.org. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. We got a lot going on. We are, one thing we're doing today is putting together, a whole team of people who will show up virtually for the commissioners meeting tomorrow.
Any last thoughts? I wasn't expecting us to like talk for almost an hour and a half, but this is a really great conversation, and I felt a lot of energy, and I feel like it could have kept continuing for another like hour and a half. And this is only the beginning, and I think a lot of work needs to get done. And this is a start, but it's a longer road.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'll kind of echo Jane's sentiments. Yeah. Like, come out and join us, or wherever you're listening, find your local organizations, join them. They need you, and like you need them. But if you're local to us, join Sunrise Berks. That you can find us on Instagram at Sunrise Berks, on Twitter, I believe also at Sunrise Berks, and on Facebook. We have a community there as well. You can donate to us if you can't get out or you don't know how else you want to get involved. Donating to organizations is also super, super helpful, because it provides the money to continue to do electoral work and to do organizing and pay people for their time when it's necessary. And yeah, just figure out how you want to show up, and I guarantee there's a space available for you.
Yeah, money's important. You know, all of us are volunteers here, but there's stuff we need to do that actually costs real money. And you know, it's an investment. Invest in what you believe in. I want to throw out one last thought. This work is long and hard, and it's easy to get discouraged. Try not to give in to that. This might sound harsh, but that's an indulgence. It's an indulgence to be tired. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, pace yourself. Of course, mm-hmm. we all get tired. We need to rest. Rest is part of the story, part of the work. Honor yourself and your limitations and your needs. You know, take good care of yourself. Make sure you get your veggies and your fresh air and your water. But keep going. I've been doing this work in one way or another all my life, and it's a big job. I now understand that I won't see the end of it, and that's okay. It's the work we need to do. We are bending the moral arc of history, and somebody's got to do it, and it's us.
That's a perfect way to kind of wrap up. And my last question for everyone and final thoughts is, in one sentence or two, what is your hope for a sustainable future?
Oh, Shayna, that's not really fair.
I hope it's much sooner than we ever believed possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was a pleasure to speak with Jane, Celine, and Troy today, and all the exciting work that's happening here in our community. And later in the episode, I will share additional information to what Celine shared about Sunrise Berks, that I'll share about Berks Stands Up as well, and a couple organizations that people can get involved in. And thanks again for listening to another episode of
Sustaining. Thank you, Shayna.
Yeah, thank you.
And take care. Thanks for listening to another episode of Sustaining with Shayna. You can now listen to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Anchor.fm, and many other platforms. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast and, of course, leave a review or comment. To follow us on Facebook or Instagram, go to sustainingwithshayna.com. Also, what you read and listen to here on the platform was carefully created and curated content made just for you, the listeners. Any generous donations can help to keep me supplying you with great content. Just go to Sustaining with Shayna's website. Click on the donate page to donate. Glad you're here. Thanks a million for listening.